The following Bloodstream Media podcast is made possible by Tremo Pharmaceuticals and is intended for informational, educational, and entertainment purposes only. Please speak with medical professionals before making healthcare decisions.
We can mask it, we can disguise it, we can function beautifully, but it's still there.
You are afraid right now because you live with pain, and your fear is causing you to stop doing the things that you love.
It requires acceptance over and over again.
It's completely different when you have someone who empathizes and truly understands what you're going through.
My life has value. My life, even with pain, I am an integral part of society.
Pins and needles. Gnawing. A sharp sensation. Lava. Constant. All-consuming. These are just some of the adjectives and phrases used to describe pain. Hi, I'm Mel Forrest, and welcome back to the Pain Pod.
I would describe it almost like the white noise in my head, or like the cry of a baby in the distance, but then it just gets louder and louder and louder.
Describing pain can be difficult. You're left with the task of putting words to something that others cannot see. Pain is extremely personal, so describing it can leave some people feeling vulnerable, timid, or even downright silly. Just a few weeks ago, I had some severe discomfort in my abdomen. When asked by my doctor to describe the pain, I reluctantly said that it felt like I had swallowed glass. Now, I hadn't swallowed glass, and never have I swallowed glass, but this pain was so sharp and constant that this was the only way I could accurately convey what I was feeling. Those who experience chronic pain are often asked to describe that pain over and over again. Words and phrases can seem hyperbolic, but they help bring truth and reality to what others can't see. Since pain is so personal, we are often left advocating for ourselves. In this episode, 5 different people share what chronic pain feels like to them, and why listening to their words matters.
If I'm having a fibromyalgia flare-up, I usually get a migraine with that, and I get a pretty nasty migraine with that.
This is April. She has multiple chronic pain conditions, including fibromyalgia, lupus, rheumatoid arthritis, chronic migraines, and chronic back pain.
If I'm having a rheumatoid arthritis flare-up, I can't do anything with my hands. So no typing at a computer, no opening things. My back pain is always kind of there. It doesn't go away. And I'm told that that'll just be something that I'll have to deal with the rest of my life. My migraines, I've kind of just learned to deal with. I've had them since I was a really little girl, but as I got older, they got much more intense. I went from having 30 days on average, so every day, during a month, a migraine. It's unfortunate that a lot of these conditions, the meds they use, don't take it away permanently, but it helps you be able to function, which I think is important to touch on, because when you're dealing with chronic pain, it is really difficult to function. If you're in a flare-up, you can't do anything.
Functioning with chronic pain can be exhausting. It can also affect every aspect of a person's daily life.
It impacts my job, it impacts my parenting, it impacts everything I do. There are some days where I'm just like, hey, to my fiance, I'm like, I can't, I need to be in bed today, and he'll have to take care of my kids and whatever else because I just can't function. I can't be good to my kids if I'm not okay. And that's the big thing that I kept telling people is like, how can I be a good mother to my children and be there for them and play with them and do everything they need me to do if I'm stuck in a bed all day? Some people are like, oh, well, you're exaggerating, or, oh, well, you just want to pop another pill. And it's like, really, we don't want that. We want to be able to live a normal life.
Life can change in a moment, and it can also change over time. After experiencing sudden paralysis, Shannon Green was diagnosed with Guillain-Barré syndrome, a rare neurological disorder where the body's immune system mistakenly attacks part of its peripheral nervous system. This unexpected diagnosis was just the beginning of her journey with chronic pain.
The first year that I had Guillain-Barré in 2014, I felt like I missed that whole year of my life. I just couldn't move. I went to several neurologists that had horrible bedside manners before I found a very compassionate doctor that I see now. But, you know, the road to diagnosis can be very long with chronic pain. It was just as confusing to me as it was to them. But my symptoms would be all over the place. And I could be fine one second, and the next second I wasn't. And it was just so unpredictable. And it made it really hard to plan activities. We never knew how it was going to feel.
The uncertainty of pain. The unpredictability of pain. Over time, these things can take a toll on a person's physical and mental health.
It does have a lot of ups and downs because nerve pain is not always an exact symptom. You can have burning, shooting, tingling. Sometimes it feels like my skin is crawling, like spiders are on my skin. There's so many different sensations and are felt at different depths by different people. And also fatigue, and if you do too much in one day, it makes your nerves angry. So, you know, you kind of have to figure out pacing. So biggest challenge for me is pacing activities in my life.
Chronic pain is very real, even if others can't see it.
People say, you don't look sick, or you're too young to have that type of pain. And you know, they mean well, but it is triggering, you know, because it's sort of like when they say, oh, well, you don't look sick. It's like they're challenging you to prove how sick you are. I think for the longest time I did hold it in, but with nerve pain, it can come on so suddenly and sharp, it'll take your breath away. So sometimes it's hard to hide it because you're going to immediately wince when that is happening. Sometimes can't hold it in. But yeah, I think the first year or two, you know, I wanted to look and be as normal as I could. I'm in some groups, non-epileptic seizures group and Guillain-Barré groups. If I had had that support system and known about these groups back in 2014, I think it would have been a lot easier road.
When I don't move, I do worse. And when you're just stagnant, we are just still and not moving your body, everything just kind of, for me, it just sort of like you freeze up.
Cassandra Campos McDonald is a pastor, an author, a mother, and an advocate. Having two sons with severe hemophilia A and inhibitors, she's no stranger to chronic pain. After years of caring for her sons, Cassandra now takes the time to manage her own daily pain.
I've had two neck surgeries. I still have really good range of motion with my neck and things like that. So I don't have anything limiting me physically, but I know that when I push myself, that pain gets even worse and worse. I have to balance things. When people see me, they think, oh, well, she's pretty fit looking and healthy, and I'm like, I really can't do that. That's what's hard and kind of embarrassing sometimes if they don't really know my struggles. Pain is there all the time. And you know, people look at you and they would never know. The invisible illness stigma is that, yeah, people can't see it. Why should I bother anybody? I don't want them to worry about me. I want to be seen as a competent individual in society who can lead my congregation, who can teach a class, who can do, you know, whatever that is that we do, without them always going, gosh, are they really hurting right now? I'm a United Methodist pastor. You know, my congregation, I think some of them know that I have it, but they would never in a million years see it. in my work or in my speaking that I do, things like that, you just don't see it. And that is what is so hard. You know, same with depression and anxiety. You can't see it, but oh my gosh, it is so isolating. It is a lonely thing because you sometimes think you're going out of your bleeping mind because surely there's no one in the world that feels like this and it's all inside your head.
Like depression and anxiety, pain can be isolating. Because it is so personal, it can sometimes feel like no one sees or understands what you're going through.
You wonder when you see a doctor, yeah, you see the diplomas on the wall and that kind of thing, but like for pain, what drove them to being a doctor for pain? I mean, do they have pain, right? Do they suffer from this? Did their mom suffer? You know, what drove them to this specialty? Why do they practice this kind of medicine? Because you wonder what they truly understand. If a doctor who had breast cancer is an oncologist, they have that understanding. I think a lot about finding the right provider is asking questions, and hopefully you know somebody who knows somebody who knows somebody. Each individual person needs to find a way, and a lot of it is mental too. Pain is not a competition about who is in more pain, because I do not want to win that contest. We should never worry that, well, mine isn't as bad as so-and-so's. Well, but you know what? It's bad for you. It's all different, right? Everybody's pain is different. And I know mine is really bad for me.
We'll hear more on what chronic pain feels like after a brief word about our sponsor.
The Pain Pod is produced by Bloodstream Media and made possible thanks to our sponsor, Tremo Pharmaceuticals.
So I'm an adventure traveler. Pretty much everything I do is an adventure.
This is Judith Boyce, Tremo's chief development officer.
However, the antithesis of that is something that I really like to do is make puzzles.
What kind of puzzles are we talking about?
Really cool, wild colors. Probably the most difficult one I ever did was of the Eiffel Tower, completely reproduced with lights that you could barely discern all of the individual components.
As enjoyable as it was to learn about Judith's prowess for puzzles, her passion for science was what I was really curious to learn more about.
Well, I'm a person that's been involved in research for many years. About 20 years of that has been in clinical research devoted to trying to find medications to help patients who have underlying disease. And so that's my passion, and that's why I'm at Tremo.
And like it is for so many, for Judith, pain is personal.
I will say that one of the things that really motivates me is that my mom had a chronic pain condition. And it was really difficult watching her have to manage with that and how debilitating it was. And some of the medications she was put on that in some ways led to her demise. So it's a very personal situation for me to think about developing, you know, medicines for people who have painful conditions and hoping that it makes their lives better.
Tremo was founded with the goal of developing and delivering non-opioid pain therapies for people with rare diseases and other carefully selected pain conditions. Tremo is currently conducting a phase 3 clinical trial for its lead product, a COX-2 selective NSAID. NSAID, for those who aren't familiar, stands for non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs. While this treatment is not FDA approved, you can learn more about Tremo's pipeline, mission, and the dedicated team working alongside Judith by going to TremoRx.com. That's TremeaRx.com. Tremo, leading the way for those left behind in pain.
In my past, I've been known to be very irritable and angry.
This is Isaac Waitaka from Kenya. Living with severe hemophilia A has left him with arthritis and chronic joint pain, which often affects his daily routine and overall quality of life.
I was in a lot of pain whenever I had to go out outside the house, and it's cold and I'm walking on irregular ground. So that hurts my joints a lot, and I'm taking a matatu, the public transport in Kenya, and it's no good. So by the time I'm getting to where I'm going, I'm in a lot of pain. So every interaction, I'm really on the edge on everything, unless I take painkillers. So I would live on painkillers all the time. So painkillers became a part of my relationships. The only people that I would say I would relate to are other people living with hemophilia. So I am the youth leader for people with hemophilia, just in one of the organizations that I work with. With them, I have to be the one who's empathetic to, you know, what they're going through and give the advice and all that. But on my end, I didn't really feel understood by anyone.
Support systems for pain management can vary depending on many factors, one being location and accessibility.
The medical support in Kenya for people with hemophilia hasn't been great. I can say about 20 years ago, people didn't even know what hemophilia was. So there was no factor, any kind of bleed would be hospitalized. So we wouldn't talk about the lifestyle of a person living with hemophilia. It's like, if you're alive, that's enough. So really on the medical side, even now, we're not yet at the sort of lifestyle place of dealing with hemophilia. We're still at the medical stage. So everything else I've just had to learn by myself. People with hemophilia have to advocate for themselves. And it's only recently that we've started even having a conversation about painkillers that didn't exist before.
Access to a good doctor, a supportive medical team, or even just information can greatly impact a person's life, especially someone with chronic pain. After many doctors and 8 years of pain and uncertainty, Andrea Neff was finally diagnosed with endometriosis.
When I was younger, they just kind of brushed it off. It's like, oh, just a bad period. And it's just because everybody's like, well, all girls have their period. All girls have pain. And so you deal with that for so long that you start to kind of, you internalize it. And so you don't always share when you're having a bad day or when you're having a flare or why you can't do something. My mom was really supportive and all that, and like would go to the doctor if I wanted her to. Of course, by the time I could drive, I'd been dealing with it so long, I just went by myself. And so like my parents were there, and I had very supportive friends, and in high school, a very supportive boyfriend who was very kind and took care of me when I needed it. But medically wise, I didn't have anyone until Dr. Partridge. And then after that, it was a lot of hit and miss with doctors. It was hard. Like I used to take Tylenol and ibuprofen all the time, but I would also get dismissed from the hospital with hydrocodone. And I had hydrocodone on me a lot during high school. And, you know, in hindsight, like I would never let my kids like carry the prescriptions around, but I remember having it in my purse and not thinking much of it. And of course, now we know that there's a whole nother issue with prescription pills, but I took Tylenol and ibuprofen all the time. I tried Midol. I tried, you know, lived with my heating pad, and that was really all I could do. And I laid in bed a lot. I didn't want to get up. Like I just was in the fetal position all of the time. And so that was hard. You know, I had good friends and good, like I said, I had a steady boyfriend through high school who was really good to me. And I had a good support system in college. But then with that comes interstitial cystitis, painful bladder syndrome. And so I have UTI symptoms all the time.
Interstitial cystitis is a chronic condition that causes bladder pain and pressure. It is commonly referred to as painful bladder syndrome.
So growing up, like by the time it was like 13 or 14. And of course, you know, when you're 15 and you go in with the UTI, all the nurses are like giving you side eye, like, I know how you got this. And I'm like, no, really, like, I don't know what's wrong with me. And so I was on, they would put me on antibiotics all the time. And to the point that like, I ended up with MRSA. I am a carrier of MRSA. I got that in college. I have antibiotics that I no longer respond to. But then after I got to see like a good doctor who was like, oh, you have interstitial cystitis. You don't actually have all these UTIs. So now anytime I have a urine test, I always have blood in my urine because I have holes in my bladder from the endometriosis. But when you have blood in your urine, it looks like an infection. So I've been treated for UTIs and kidney infections and all of this stuff like my whole life. And then it turns out it was actually the endometriosis that caused that. So it's been a whirlwind.
Words hold weight, and how people choose to describe pain can paint a larger picture, not just of the pain, but of an overall life lived with pain. Access to a good doctor and a supportive medical team is essential. Still, sometimes it's finding someone who really listens to what you say that makes all the difference. When we listen, we can begin to understand. Join us next time as we continue our journey with April, Shannon, Isaac, Cassandra, and Andrea. We will navigate the new normal and daily life of a person with chronic pain on episode 4 of the Pain Pod. The Pain Podcast is written and hosted by me, Mel Forrest, produced and edited by Greg Holdsman, artwork by Ryan Gielen and Christina Newhart, post-production support from Joshua Sterling Bragg, Rob Bradford, and Ava Friedman, and executive produced by Patrick James Lynch. The Pain Pod is produced by Bloodstream Media and presented by Tremo Pharmaceuticals. Learn more about Tremo and the work they're doing to help alleviate pain by visiting TREMEAURX.com. And as always, if you liked this episode, make sure to subscribe, rate, and share the Pain Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Mel Forrest, and we'll be back next time with episode 4 of the Pain Pod.